Setting up shop.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Setting Up Shop, the podcast that is really a maker journey, but also here to try and help you guys through sharing of our own journeys, sharing of our own experiences in going from a hobby or side hustle in the creative space through to potentially going full-time or part-time with it, and just seeing what things have happened to us that we can share with you that hopefully you will learn from or take inspiration from. So I'm Dan Woodturner from the UK, and with me as always are my co-hosts, Rasmus Lowen, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And Heidi Jacobs, a potter from America.
Hey there.
There we go. I like to change up the order a little bit. I didn't quite go fast enough. Rasmus was drinking, mm-hmm. and I was trying to catch him out at that point in time, but it just didn't work. I speak quickly, but not that quickly. Today's subject, we've had a bit of discussion about, we've been very good about covering negative things or having a negative perspective on all of the stuff that we're looking at. And those people who know me will say, well, that's no surprise. I have a reputation as looking at things from a negative perspective. However, what we're going to cover today, our subject today is enjoy the win. That's what it's being called, enjoy the win. And so this is going to be us looking at occasions where things have either gone to plan or, you know, you've done that big custom project or whatever, and then it's been delivered. And maybe the customer's just gone, oh, thanks, here's the money. And that's it. There's no, could you tweak it? Oh, actually, we're not ready for it yet. There's no complications, nothing like that. So hopefully all three of us have got some examples of those sorts of things happening, because this can only be encouraging to all of us, those of you particularly listening, about the fact that things do go right sometimes. And it's so easy to dwell on the negative thing. It's so easy to dwell on the failures. Prime example of that is if you ever look at the review of something on a website that you're buying something from, it could have 50,000 five-star positive reviews, but a lot of people will always check those like 10 one-star reviews at the bottom, and then that will make their decision as to whether or not they're going to purchase the thing. It's unfortunately human nature. For our first example then, we're going to go to Heidi first. And I'm just going to give her a couple of seconds to consider that while I'm pre-warning her that we're going to go to Heidi. And what we're going to talk about then is, first of all, when you're thinking of a success, what is it you're chasing? Are you chasing a feeling or an objective / goal?
9 times out of 10, it's like a end result goal and not necessarily like, just euphoria. The euphoria comes with the express finishing of the goal or the surpassing of the goal. Yeah. So that, I think 9 times out of 10, I have an idea in my head, or I'm being asked to make something that I haven't made before. And I'm not real, like, there's that like, oh, am I getting in over my head? Is this something I can really do? And then, you know, kind of work through those feelings. And then, you know, for me, it's really the end result is the woohoo.
Yeah. Okay. Rasmus, same question to yourself then. Are you chasing the feeling or the objective / goal?
It's the objective. It's checking the box, having it done. And then I more often than not move on to the next job very quickly.
Okay. I must be weird. I'm the other way around.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think like you said, Heidi, it's that kind of like, well, the feeling will happen when you reach the objective. But I think for me, part of the whole reason why I'm doing the creative element in the first place is for the joy of it, is to witness the look on someone's face when they have had revealed to them something that has been made specifically for them by me. And the kind of, if you can achieve that moment where there is a look of wonder, of joy, of like, this can't actually be for me, you must be joking kind of feeling, that's like the thing, which possibly on some subliminal level should suggest I have an addictive personality rather than being, you know, in any way, shape or form suitable for being a business owner. But yeah, I mean, the fact that should be reached by hitting an objective is probably quite secondary for me. Okay. And is also probably why I haven't developed it as far as I should have done.
Well, I like the idea of like the process is the joy.
Yeah.
And it is what kind of keeps you moving forward. I can say like I have some of that too, but the reason my why is typically because I want the end result versus I just want to have the, I just want to sit in my studio and throw, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe at the beginning it was more like, oh, I don't care what turns out. Mm. Just as long as I get to be in here doing this thing.
Mm. Yeah. I think the thing for me is that until I have seen, if I'm making a bespoke piece in particular, until the customer has physically held it in their hands and told me that they like it and that there's nothing they want changing to it, I won't believe that it's finished.
Oh.
Hmm.
Like, I will always have a level of doubt in my head in the sense of I will always assume that I will default to assuming that the customer is not going to like it. They're going to want something changed. They're going to want me to completely restart it. They're not going to like the color or whatever the case may be. And I'll do a lot of work at the front end to try and minimize that feeling. So like if I can, I will go through the wood selection with the customer. I will talk heavily about the design. If there's drawings, inspiration, I'll take photos and videos to send them throughout the process. Mm. But I still won't be utterly convinced that they are happy with it until I have literally seen the look on their face, money's exchanged hands, that, you know, that kind of thing. I will always have that doubt.
Yeah. So you're kind of getting mini dopamine hits throughout the project by like, hey, do you like this? Is this what you want?
Yeah, it's reassurance more than dopamine. I think it's reassurance more than dopamine. Mm-hmm. But okay. Yeah, you could look at it that way as well.
Yeah.
So this is really not doing too well from a psychoanalytical stance as to whether or not an addictive personality. But yeah, that's definitely the thing. But then, you know, I suppose in some ways it's just a different form of goal, isn't it? So when we talk about being goal-oriented, my goal isn't make 10 items this week that will all sell. You know, my goal is make 10 people happy with the items that I have made for them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just a different variant on the goal. So yes, at least we all know what we're chasing, which apparently mine is some form of euphoria.
Nobody's saying it's
or
wrong.
praise if we really, that's a whole rabbit hole we could start going down, but we're not going to on this episode. Any psychoanalysts who are listening to the podcast who want the subject to study on extra, you know, on the for free, because I don't have the money as a poor creative person to pay anything. You know, send a direct message or feel free to ask if you can sponsor the show.
Can I flip that a little bit? Like, what if you're making something for yourself? Do you ever feel like it's done? Or are you too, like, are you overly critical and you're always
agreeing? I don't tend to make things for me that are pretty. I'll make something for my wife. I'll make something for my wife that can be used in the home that I will see.
Yeah.
But the person in that who has to like that is my wife.
Mm.
Right. So you don't make anything for you?
If I make something for myself, it will be a replacement handle for a tool or...
Huh.
You know, it will be a functional thing that has to have a purpose that...
It has to be a bowl.
Yes, it has to actually be a bowl. But it would have to be like, you know, I would have to have a conscious thought of, we don't have X product in the house. I know that it would be appreciated if I made it, and it would also be able to be put away somewhere rather than having to be on display. So I don't think I've ever just made a thing for myself that wasn't some form of prototype or a... when I say that, I'm talking about since I started wood turning and taking it seriously. Like in the past, I've, you know, with other things I've made, I've definitely made stuff for myself. But that's nowhere near as satisfying. Like, because I'll make the thing and
I feel very selfish right now.
No, it's just the element of the difference is, though, Heidi, like you've got a kiln to fill, right?
Yeah.
So there'll be an element of that where you're like, oh, well, actually, I'll keep X amount of percentage of space for something for myself, but it's part of the whole process. Whereas I can only have one thing on one lathe at a time, and I only have one lathe. Mm. So, and if I'm working in batches or if I'm making like cutting boards and things like that, then that's a batch process and they're all going to be the same shape.
Right.
So I'm not...
So you're already set up for that.
Yeah, exactly. So... if I do make something for myself, it's probably going to be something to make my processes more efficient or better quality. Hmm. And that would be, so it'd be making something for myself, but it's not going to be a shiny thing that other people would look at and see, isn't that a nice shiny thing? It's going to be the sort of thing someone walk in and go, what the hell is that contraption made out of plywood in the corner that's like zip tied together?
This probably like goes back to your literal brain, like how literal you are about things, like how specific you are about what something is called. And, you know, like it's not worth my time in a way, like it's not worth my time doing unless it's going to benefit me in some specific way. And for me as an, like, I have two personalities when it comes to my craft. I'm very like customer focused. So that's one part of my brain that's like more like what's marketable. Yeah. And then there's the other part of my brain that needs to create fine art or like something adjacent to fine art. And I can see how that is like a little bit divergent from what your studio ethic.
I think I genuinely have, like, it's interesting because the fine art thing, like I made a bowl earlier this year or late last year. Sorry.
It was really a bowl.
It is really a bowl. and it was out of Spalted Beech. And I've got three more blanks, same sort of size. And they're 3 inches deep and about, I can't remember, 12 or 14 inches in diameter. That's 350 mil by 75 for European. And so it's reasonable size, but I made it to a shape that a form that I was kind of, I liked and I was playing with. And I made it because I could make it and I wanted to see what the end result would be. And I spent a lot of time making sure it was sanded well, because that type of wood can be quite tricky, and that it was really nice and smooth and everything. And I didn't make it with the intent of keeping it, but I showed it to a woodworker who's been doing this a lot longer than me that I respect a lot. And his comments were, first of all, there was nothing he would change about it. It was executed well.
Nice.
But his second comment was, that to me looks like a piece you should keep. He has only ever once in his 40 years turning seen the kind of spalting in that timber before. So he said, for the rarity value of that timber and for the fact that it's got a function and it's, you know, because basically it could be a salad bowl, it could be a fruit bowl, it could be whatever. He said that he would, if you've got more of that wood in that size, he said, you can make three others to sell, but keep that one for yourself.
Yeah.
And so it was only after having that conversation with him that I decided to keep that one for myself. And then it is now our fruit bowl. But it wasn't I made this for myself and therefore that's why I put a high level of thing into it. It was like, no, that is the standard I was aiming for anyway. And then it's happened to be that I've decided to keep it.
Please post a picture of it on our shared setting up
on
shop.
Instagram. Yeah. So our Instagram. So our listeners can actually see. I'll post a reel. I'll put a reel up. Yeah. I'll do a little video.
Let us see it.
Yeah.
Silly question though. Did that conversation change how you actually saw the piece? Like, did you then sort of, only then realize how unique the spalting was?
I knew that it was pretty.
Hmm.
I didn't know it was more unique. And in all honesty, unless you're a wood nerd, most people wouldn't realize that it's more unique. They'd just go, oh, that's pretty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was more of an encouragement as to what I was going to do with it rather than just put it on the website. Because I think that's definitely something that all of us struggle with. It wasn't, you know, I don't struggle with pricing things necessarily. You either buy it or you don't at the price that I set, or you have a really good conversation with me that persuades me to want to sell it to you for less money. So I've never had a problem with pricing, but I have had a problem with just making things to sell.
Hmm.
Like I need to sit down and go, right, I want to make this range of products and this range of products, and I want to make X amount of each of those. And this was just kind of a whim. It was kind of I've just bought this wood. I've processed it all. I really want to make something with this piece of wood.
Hmm.
And so I did, as opposed to, I have this project, you know, I have this market coming up and I want to make things. I think I was trying to make like the one-off set piece, like the big thing that you have near the back to try and like get people's attention.
Hmm.
That's how it started. But we've gone on a bit of a tangent now talking about one specific item. which for the majority of the, well, the majority of the non-woodworking people listening won't necessarily find exciting.
But well, I still want to ask one question about it, though.
Go on, then.
Are you now able to look at it and think like, oh, I did well? Like, are you able to actually celebrate the achievement you did of making that thing now that you sort of have decided to keep it for yourself?
I think that will. I think that's a different conversation in the sense we'll talk about how okay. how do people celebrate things, because I'm very rapidly discovering the more and more of these we record how strange I am compared to most other people, including other creatives. Because for me, my way I would celebrate something is every time someone comes around the house, I have to show them the thing. And then other than that, if it gets moved from where it lives, or if people possibly start to suggest that maybe it's looking a bit tired and that maybe it could be retired, I'm like, no, that's mine. That doesn't get thrown away. That is, you know, I will assign a huge amount of emotional kind of links to it that aren't rational, despite what we've said earlier, where I'm like, no, because that will it will have specific memories of conversations and interactions with people fixed to that object. So therefore, I can't now lose it. So it's celebration, if you like, is almost like it becomes a storage point for evoking happy memories type idea.
Mm. Yeah.
If that makes any sense at all, this sounds very, very odd, even as I'm saying it. But yeah, I will hold on to random bits of material or tools or objects because I can remember that was gifted to me by such and such person. I won't remember specific dates. Like, I'm not Rain Man. I'm just kind of like very, it means a lot to me because it reminds me of an event or person or something that happened. So yeah, so that my way of celebrating it is almost to kind of add it to the hoard, like a dragon, and you know, and it's occasionally there to be shown to other people, but never to be taken away.
I get that. Mm.
Okay. Well, now that completely unintentional deep dive into my psyche has happened, which feels like it was not that deep at all and very, very scratching the surface. Examples then of when you guys feel like you have won and you're going to be able to, you know, how you have celebrated that win. And we'll ask Heidi again first, purely because it feels like myself and Rasmus have spoken quite a lot.
Well, I would say, remember last year that I bought that laser?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I bought the laser because I wanted to make my own rolling pins with texture. Mm-hmm. And then I made a rolling pin with a map of the city of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And okay, like each step was a nice thing. It's like, ooh, it's working. today I pulled out of the kiln my finished pieces from the first iteration of this technique. And I'm like over the moon about it. And when I said like, I made these for myself, it wasn't like I'm precious about them that I'm going to keep them, but like I wanted to see something through to fruition so that I could have this tangible thing to say like my idea worked, me putting the expense into this laser made sense. Mm-hmm. And the response, like the text messages that I got today from people seeing it and people saying like, when are you going to put it on your site to sell? Mm-hmm. Like I only made a limited number because I wasn't sure if the techniques that I was using to glaze it were going to come to fruition the way that I wanted it in my head. So I only, obviously it's the test run, so I only did a few, but the feedback that I'm getting is a bonus to the just merit of how excited I am for myself that it was provable. What I was attempting to do was provable.
Yeah.
And that would be my example today specifically. I'm just like still riding that euphoria of seeing them, like opening the kiln and seeing them for the first time was like super tangible and exciting today.
So is it more that you're celebrating the win of a concept working, or is it an element of it, the justification for the new equipment, or a combination of that? Or
I would say like, sure, it's validation of the equipment purchase, but not necessarily, because I bought the equipment not just with this in mind. It was like a part of why I wanted the big machine and why I wanted the rotary tool and all those things. But the machine is getting use and it's pretty much paid for itself with the use that I've put into it with other things, like being able to cut my own stamps and those kind of things. But I would say it's more having this vision in my head and seeing it come to life, maybe even better than what I had it in my head, what it was going to look like.
Yeah.
Hmm. And not that I set the bar low or anything, but I, because of my experience and my history and, you know, understanding how far I can push clay and how far I can push glaze, I didn't have overly, I hadn't over envisioned,
yeah,
so to speak, what it was going to ultimately look like. I was pragmatic about what it was going to look like, but it still came out better than what I thought it was going to come out. So it, I think my excitement is on the end result and not so much on the justification of the purchase or provability that I could.
So it's the art, it's the art brain, not the business.
Yeah. 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 It's it's the art brain. And then the bonus is the marketing brain going, fuck yeah, this is going to be great. Cause I think ultimately this, the map portion was me pushing the boundaries of what I thought the laser was going to be capable of doing. Right. Because a lot of rolling pins that are out there are the reverse. So instead of having debossing, which is what I did, it's more embossing. So everything's raised. And when you do the embossing, it's a lot less laser work. And it doesn't, like, you don't tend to have as many really thin pieces of wood left over that could, like, over time get abused and, you know, fail. So this is a map and it's all debossing. So you've got these really, really fine lines to create the streets and the rivers and the bridges and everything. And so because I wanted to, like, just push the envelope with what this machine was capable of, then it kind of, like, got my creative juices flowing. Like, okay, well, what can I do? Oh, I can do a map. I can do a city map. Oh, that's going to be really cool on a platter. So if I do that on a platter, then, you know, what else can I put into this map? Or, like, what colors should I do? And then I started thinking about, like, all those maps that are out there, and, like, something that hit personal to me were, like, the old Rand McNally maps that you could get of your town or, like, of your state, and you get the thick book and all the pages, and some of them are pale yellow and some of them are pale pink, and because they're, like, calling out the regional. So I went with pale blue. And I just mixed up some water and a light blue to make a wash. And I did do some, like, experimenting and testing about, like, the sequence of glazes and everything before I got to the end result. And those were, like, they proved out that my thought process was working, but maybe not to the level that I wanted it to.
Yeah.
So then the final result, I hit all the points that I wanted to, that the black was in deep enough that it shows up really nicely, that the wash made it look like it was aged, that the gloss didn't, like, spread the black out. Cause sometimes when you put a gloss over a black, it'll, like, bleed out. And then you get these little bursts of goop and they don't look great. And then because I had room in the kiln, I was able to put several pieces in at one time and put a mug in that I had made, like, using the map in different directions on the slab. It just, I don't know.
I'm just pulling up the image of the result of it today. So for those of you who haven't seen this, I will also have to put this in the social media as part of the
link,
which means Rasmus is now going to have to think of something.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, it's a really cool kind of, it's the way you've got the set. I particularly like the tray.
Yeah.
But that's partly because of the whole old map liking thing. It's not that I dislike the mugs or the other pieces you've done, but it just, it's able to represent for me so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, that's a whole series on its own that you could do that are common usage. You could even go themed as well. I mean, for some bizarre reason, straight into my head was, not that you would want to do it because of risk of getting, you know, copyright infringement, but it was straight away thinking about, like, the Discworld maps and things like that.
You learned,
you know, all of that kind of stuff. There's just so many things that, you know, some of our friends, like Red Smith, has done with his leather maps and things like that, that you would be able to, if you could get your variants that you can make with your, the rolling pin element of it and go across, which I'm sure none of this is a new idea to you, but
it does make your brain explode with ideas, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And both sides, exactly as you've said, like the artist and the commercial brain, where it's going, like, well, I could do a very limited run of these and make these special and unique, or I could make money. Because I would imagine like the trays and the mugs with that on it, certainly in Pittsburgh, as you know, you've proved for other stuff, that those will sell, like, because the tourist shops will want them, the locals will want, like, the trays would go well in coffee shops and all of that kind of stuff. And yeah. I think that's definitely something that can be celebrated. Absolutely.
Do you want to know what I'm going to add next to it?
Go on. Because I've had a couple of ideas I was going to share with you off camera, but go ahead.
Gold luster.
Yeah, that was one of the ideas I was going to have. I was also going to be even worse than that and say that you should or could add gold to specific key points.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what I was thinking. The point of, like, there's a convergence of multiple rivers in that map. You can kind of see it towards the bottom of the photo, or we call it the point.
Yeah.
And I thought about, like, just highlighting that area in some way. Like, I'll probably redo the rolling pin now that I can see that it works and add some more information on there. But
if you're able to do the rolling, if you're able to do the rolling pin in such a way, and the map, because I'm assuming it's an older map, if the older map has one of the buildings on it of one of your coffee shops that you sell this to, then there should totally just be that little block is the bit that's colored in gold. And like, you know, that kind of element, sort of all of a sudden it's now very specific.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could take that so far in so many different directions. Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Explosions.
Okay, Rasmus, what's your example of when you got to enjoy the win?
So this week, I was able to, in the process of about 4 heats, develop a new product and prototype it and manufacture it at an optimal speed.
Okay. So for our listeners who are not familiar with blacksmithing, I'm going to try and explain this because, you know, even though I've got a blacksmith sat in front of me, it would be much more entertaining if I try and do this. So a heat is a circle of one heat is from putting the raw material of the metal into the fiery bit known as the forge and letting it get up to temperature ready for him to manipulate it with whatever tools, i.e. probably a hammer. And efficiency that blacksmiths are chasing or should be chasing is to do that as minimum times as possible, because the more times you're putting it in there and the less work you'll get done. I'm making it more complicated now. The less amount of work you get done per heat means it's inefficient.
Yes.
So every time you hit it, it's going to start to cool down. Obviously, it's come out of the source of the heat and you're hitting it, it's going to start to cool down. So if you aren't accurate with your strikes and if you aren't consistent with your force of strikes, this means you're going to have to do it more times, which then means obviously it takes longer and therefore it will cost more.
Yeah, because also you're burning money, you're burning propane.
Yes.
Or coal or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, I happen to be really lucky in the sense that I had a customer order a thing, basically just a wood splitting wedge.
Okay.
But like just sending a boring triangle bits of steel, kind of not fun, kind of hard to justify upcharging for it being handmade, so to speak. And I had previously like played around with a few ideas and looked at other people's things and sort of get like, what are other people doing? Are anyone else making these? What's the price range? Blah, 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 blah. And I was playing in the forge like a while back and sort of just, I weren't happy with anything I was making. And then now it's like, okay, fuck it. Let me find a decent bit of steel in the like reasonable diameters. I had like one chunk of about 80 centimeters or something of 25 mil square, 1 inch square. And I was like, okay, cool. Let me cut off X centimeters of that just to play with. And I just initially just draw that out, made a thing, got some details on it, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then the remaining piece I had was like perfect to make another one exact same size. And then I was like, cool. I spent 2 heats making the prototype, 1 heat making the first of a production series to see how quick I can do it. Then I was like, well, I guess this is the run. I guess this is it. So I just took that piece of steel, the last one I had of 25 mil square, cut all of it up in 25 centimeter bits, in 10 centimeter bits, and drew it out and just made it. So I sort of had the development process, I had the prototype and the win, and I celebrated by making more of them just right away because it was fresh of mind. I just could do it right now.
Excellent.
Yes, so, I love it.
So for comparison, just to go back a little bit, how many heats would an item on, you know, like on average, that's of a similar complexity, like if you're being inefficient, if we step back a few years, let's say, to, you know, certainly before you had a power hammer.
Yeah.
How many heats would something like that used to have taken you?
If I were to try to do this by hand without a power hammer, and we go back maybe 5 years, 4 years.
Yeah.
This might have taken me 10, 15 heats.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would not be able to make 8 in a row. It would be one and having a break.
Yeah, because
you'd be exhausted. Or maybe making 2 at once and cycling between them and then being knackered for half an hour and then making 2 again.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that's really cool because that's not only is that a enjoying the win of the fact that you have that ability now, partly through experience and partly through the fact that you've made an investment in machinery. So both of you, it's a case of, you know, you've invested in machinery, which has unlocked the next thing. But the next thing, whilst the potential is there, if you haven't got the process in your head to go, oh, well, now I've got this tool, I can do this, I can manipulate this in this way. So it's quite interesting to hear it from that perspective because you've almost got multiple wins there. In like the again, the machine paying for itself in the business.
Yeah.
The fact that the win is your brains being able to manipulate that kind of information and go, oh, this now means I can do this, rather than it just being, oh, well, I have machine. Machine works. Machine doesn't work when I don't touch it. And then we don't think about machine unless I decide I need to use it. And the fact that you kind of conceptualize and literally taken this product, you've not gone and done what he was expecting you to do necessarily, which would have probably been like your bog standard form or shape that you could have made that looked exactly the same as one he could have bought from a cheaper place.
And to be fair, it's not like highly technical shape or anything.
No.
I didn't reinvent anything here.
No, it's not a spiral.
Well, that would be a funny way of splitting wood with wedge, but like the only like detailed thing I did was make it octagon on the end where normally it would be sort of a square taper. I was like, and just looking at that, I was like, or looking at the wedge shape and seeing like that sort of square section at the end, I was like, that's boring, let me knock down the corners to an eight, to an octagon instead of just breaking them down a little bit. I was like, this works now, this is fun.
Yeah.
And then also in the next step going like, I wonder if I can do this in one heat, and then just actually being able to do it in one heat on the first try.
So it's challenging yourself at the same time. It's not being hesitant. It's recognizing that it doesn't matter if something weren't to go quite the way that it should, because you can re-manipulate it and carry on.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because both of you are, you've got really good examples of wins, but it's also good examples of how, you know, the level of experience you've got. Do you see what I mean? Like there's definitely the win and it doesn't, and these could happen at almost any level. You've conceptualized a product, you've manufactured it in whatever way you've done it, and it's had a really positive result in for both of you. But it's also interesting to me as an observer or listener that it's kind of also that leveling up thing that we've spoken about a lot in the past with the computer game analogy. For those of you who don't know, I'm reading an awful lot of literary RPG novels at the moment. So this is this is very much ticking that corner of my brain box. If you don't know what they are, look them up. Just be wary for some readers that some of them are spicier than you would expect them to be.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, there's not always, it's not like they necessarily come with a warning label when they're free on a Kindle. So just making people aware that, you know, if that's not your thing, then it's something to be wary of. Tangent aside, you already said, Rasmus, the way that you celebrated was to go, hey, I know this product will work, you like it, and so you then made a whole load more.
Yeah.
Which is in true Rasmus form because you had an order for one. So how many do you now have in stock? Oh, sorry, an order for three. So how many do you now have in stock?
I have sent those three and I still have five in stock.
Oh, okay. It's only five more. I had this idea of like this bar producing like 40 units or something. And you've now got a whole new photo. You've got a whole new description on the website.
No, I haven't even got them on the website yet. but I did take some product pictures.
Which you'll have to send me so I can also put that on the social media.
I have a reel on Instagram already about how I forge these.
Well, you'll have to reshare it to the Setting Up Shop Instagram, which everyone should be following. That's setting underscore up underscore shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. If you aren't already listening to this because you've watched my whole series of shorts that I've been putting up throughout May on almost a daily basis, shameless plug. Okay. Heidi, I can't remember if you mentioned how did you celebrate that element of it? Because you've only pretty much posted this finish yeah. today, haven't you?
Yeah. Honestly, like, I've just been kind of sitting in the joy. The first thing I did was took pictures. Like, I sat down and made a scene and took pictures. Not made a scene, like, sat down and made a
photography scene. Yeah. You set dressed a scene for your images.
Yeah, so that I could share it, because you're chasing that Instagram fame, right? Always. And then I had to make a delivery today, which always feels really good for me because my customers are amazing. So I was able to like pull out my phone and show her what I was working on. And in my joy, she got excited and said, how can we use this in our business? Right. Like how can we build something that is for Freeport, PA? Or, you know, she's getting really excited and saying like, oh, I'm going to have to talk to my co-owner, Wendy. And, you know, we're going to have to sit down and think about like what kind of texture we could do. Maybe you could do like wallpaper, kind of like their high school mascot is the yellow jacket. So should it have bees all over it or something like that? And so then she got really excited, which got me more excited, and then got Carver excited. And he's like, mommy, we should go home and play in clay. So kind of the same as Rasmus. It's like, okay, I've proven it now. Like I'm inspired.
Yeah.
And the celebration is in the inspiration that it kind of boosted. So like talking about the gold leaf or the gold inlays or whatever, and, you know, thinking about, okay, well, what if I did different colors, or like, what if I went in and did some additional detailing, or, you know, that those kind of things. So I think that's for most people with my type of brain and artistic expression, it's building off of the fruits of a success.
Yeah.
Can be in and of itself like the celebration of, you know, proving that it could work, it did work, and now what can I do more with this? Similar to what Rasmus was saying, it's like, ooh, just make some more. But I did treat myself to a matcha tea, and you know that felt really good. And now I'm talking to you, blokes, and it's nice to. You know.
Don't include us as part of the celebration.
Sure. You are a part of the celebration. Come on. I've spent the last 2 years talking at your faces. It's part of the joy too, to like bring to you guys like, hey, this is what I'm doing, and then get some feedback to say like,
and then, hey, you remember that thing we were talking about? Hey, this worked and this is the result and that's cool. And
yeah. Yeah. So that's all part of the celebration too.
Well, I have to say, as part of that, and again, this is another shameless plug, I can't remember if we've already mentioned this, but certainly myself and Heidi, unless things change between recording this and the release of it, will both be at the Maker Camp in the Catskills in October.
Mm-hmm.
It is October, end of October. And I believe that, well, I know tickets are on sale because I've bought tickets. So if you guys are still unsure, if you haven't heard about the Catskills Maker Camp, I am reliably informed from those other two in this group who have both been before that it is well worth attending. It's an event with a variety of levels of whether you get a day pass or an all weekend pass or whatever. There will be blacksmithing, there will be wood turning, there is photography and just a whole range of like makery things you can either have a go at or witness or speak to people about, all like-minded people who just want to come and to sort of do this thing and show off what they love and talk to other people about it. And it's an event that is very healthy and good for our community. And so myself and my wife are coming over to specifically to come to that event. And then Heidi's coming along as well. Unfortunately, Rasmus is unable to attend. But hey, do you know what? By October, we may actually have some merch. We kept saying that we would have it like now. And realistically, I think we could this season probably announce the launch of the shop, but we've got a few tweaks to do before we can officially do that. But it would be really cool. So we will probably be wandering around in, given that time of year, hoodies and or hats with the brand logos on it. And I'm sure we will have stickers and things that we can hand out to people. So if you see us, please feel free to come up in a nice way and say, hi, I listen to your podcast or I watch your podcast or whatever the case may be. And given like there'll be thousands of people there clearly wearing our merch, it might be an idea to just check that we are actually Dan and Heidi before you randomly approach. Speaking of which, I may have to just gift a t-shirt of it to Jeff Fader to wear just for the hilarity value for people who don't know him to see if he's that's a complete sidebar random thought now. But yeah, so again, another shameless plug, but we will be at that event. So if that persuades you to go, then great. I think that would be lovely, and we would love to chat to you guys and further your maker experience at that event.
It's October 10th through 12th, and the area is upstate New York, and it's in the mountains. So like Dan was saying, it's a bit chilly, and it's rain or shine. So they have the event, whether you're soaking wet, like Rasmus and I experienced last year or the year before, but it's a really incredible event, and they have food on site and beer, if you're into that sort of thing.
I mean, and it's American beer.
Yeah, it's all right.
Don't start, like, we've done very well to get no animosity so far on this podcast. Like, they don't create problems when there aren't any. Come on. John D. Harvey will be ringing you up.
There's camping on site. They have cabins that you need to book now if you're planning on doing that. But I tented out in the back of my truck. Some people get Airbnbs, and
which is what I will be doing because I'm old and I don't like camping.
Really nice, wholesome event. Kids are welcome. There's a sewing tent. There's a blacksmith area. There's people that are doing jewelry making and leather working and just really
glass blowing sometimes and stone carving and
things. Oh, the stone carving was pretty badass.
Yeah.
So yeah, a complete segue again. We're doing really well this episode,
but
it's relevant. It's entirely relevant. People, I don't think the Maker Camp needs will sponsor anyone.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, I mean that in all honesty is probably one of the ways that I do tend to celebrate is to, hey, I made this thing, everyone look at it because I think it's amazing. But most often as well is wanting my fellow creative people to see it, and to, because let's be honest, right, when you make a thing and you show it to, as our friend Andy Burkey would say, the gen pop or the general population, and they don't necessarily grasp why it's really cool unless it just looks cool. So like Heidi's thing will look really cool. You know, the map-based products she makes will look cool, and they will speak to people from the area where that map's from, and it's going to be clear and obvious what it is, and it's nice. Rasmus's product for his one-off customer, he will kind of go, oh, that's really cool. But it's not going to be quite so evocative. But him showing it to like other blacksmiths or other creative people will go, ooh, why, you know, does that make it more efficient? How did you do that? Why would you do? And it's the analysis of the creative process behind it. So for me, part of the win is showing a product I've made with fellow creative people and having those conversations about the process, the form, the thought process, and the physical manufacturing process behind it, all of which can make things exciting, interesting, and also a challenge, and also that kind of spur you off into different areas of inspiration as well, which realistically for all of us is kind of the fuel that keeps us going and keeps us hungry to keep trying. Summarized.
I would like
to story in three parts.
I would just like to sort of also
just summary by Rasmus as is possible.
It's just like I know I've struggled with sort of living in that moment of recognizing, oh, I did good. I'm so often driven on to just like, oh no, I need to get more done. I have more things that needs doing. I have another client lined up, another project coming up. And sometimes I really need to sort of force myself to just sit there for a second and just look at it and go like, yeah, that's okay. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I've found generally that the way that I know that I think I'm done with it, like it's good and it's finished. And this is a really, really sad indictment, certainly of the modern society, is that I'm then happy to take a picture or a reel to put it on social media. But at the same time, that does mean that you do sit and take the moment because you consider, how do I describe this piece? How would I describe it so that other people understand what I'm feeling at this point in time with this thing and all of that kind of good stuff? So that there is definitely an element there of using the good of social media rather than looking at social media as being negative. If we're to continue this, the theme of today's episode of actually the fact that you can share your work with the world. You can choose how you share it, whether it is a physical static image, it is a video of the image, a video of the process of how you got there. However it is you have decided to share that product finally or the creation with the world, whilst can be guided by algorithmic things that are going to mean more people see it, is still down to you as part of your choice as to how you reveal it to the world.
Yeah.
And so that can make you pause and consider the item that little bit more and be sure that you are happy that it is finished or whether it needs any further work.
Mm. Well said.
Well.
Summarized.
T-shirt that just says summarized.
whisper.
Oh, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. If you've got this far through our usual level of introspection and psychoanalysis of Dan, then we will be back again for the next episode where we will consider a different topic, all to do with the maker journey, all to do with how we deal with a wide variety of challenges, but also events that happen to you whilst you are trying to take your hobby through to maybe selling at markets and then maybe even going as far as selling full time. With each season, we are going to have a guest. We are hunting one down for this season at the moment. We've got someone in mind. They've previously agreed to record with us. We just need to find a date that's suitable for everyone so that they are able to do that. So yeah, that should be a long expected episode when that occurs. But other than that, check us out individually and all together. So we are setting up shop, as I've previously mentioned on Instagram. It is setting_up_shop, SHOPPE. We are settingupshop.com as our website. You can email us info@settingupshop, no underscores, or you can find us individually, myself at Tarrants, TARRANTS.co.uk. That is my Instagram. That is my Facebook. It's also info@tarrants.co.uk on the email. Rasmus, you can find at Rasmus Loen, L-O-E-N, on the Instagrams, and Loen.no, something like that. Norwegian internet. Loen Smed, that was it. Loen Smed, S-M-E-D, for .no. And then Heidi, you can find at Whitehall_pottery. That kind of worked for everyone.
Yeah.
It's only been a couple of years.
Yeah, it's fine. And I changed mine. So everyone listening from season one to now will get really confused.
You're having a babble.
Yeah, what happened? What's going on? Who's this other guy with the beard? His evil twin brother.
His name is Nan. Nad.
Not Nad. And as always, cheers for that, Heidi. We will speak to you all again, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.